Come to order. We have a large agenda today, so it'd be helpful if we can limit our questions to the individual bills until the end of the testimony for this morning. But if you have questions of individuals, please make sure that you ask them, at the time that they're up there, because some of these people have come from out of town, and we're going to, they may not be available at a later time. So to get, so if you understand what their proposals are, that's important. How it's going to all be put together as a committee a recommendation, we'll be working on that on Thursday. Let's see if we do not have, we do not have this room reserved at 4:30. We do? Okay, we do have this room reserved at 4:30 this afternoon when we'll complete any agenda items. If we leave here today, we just leave everything right here? We have to take it with us. Have to take everything with, okay? So if you leave today, we'll let you know if we are adjourning and reconvening later this afternoon. And keep in mind that we'll not have the items wait for us here in the room. They'll be have to be cleaned up and put back later. I think we'll start now with Cox, House File 85. While he's coming to the table, I'd like to take care of the, we have minutes. We have a couple of minutes that I'd like to move. Representative Packbarth moves the minutes of January 13th. Are there any additions or corrections? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. We also have the minutes of January 27th. Representative Dill moves the approval of the minutes on January 27th. Any additions or corrections? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. The Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 85 before you, it deals with the Milltown State Trail. And the Milltown Trail is asking for slightly more than $4 million of funding from the capital bond funds to complete this trail. This is a trail that has been approved by this committee in the past and has received funding in earlier years. The trail plan started about 14 years ago. And it now has a fully functioning trail board and approvals from the cities along the route. PEG is holding up the trail route here. And I do want to acknowledge PEG Kova, who's done some great work on this trail, and others that are from the Northfield area here today. The Milltown Trail runs roughly 25 miles along, connecting the city of Faribault with the city of Cannon Falls, passing through the cities of Northfield and Dundas. And earlier funding from the state, along with some private funding raising efforts, allowed partial completion of the trail, the section from Northfield to Dundas to the south, which included two creek crossings that were challenges to do. That has been completed and has seen good use. The funding request before you will provide funds to complete the trail. Approximately $2 million is needed to complete the work through the city of Faribault, which includes the crossing of a state highway and the Cannon River, and the balance of the funds will be used to complete the trail section from Northfield to Cannon Falls. As you can see on the map there, the Milltown Trail is basically the center section, and the trail will connect with the Sakata Singing Hills Trail, which runs from Mankato to Faribault, and then it'll connect on the north with the Cannon Valley Trail, which runs from Cannon Falls to Red Wing. So ultimately, it'll have a continuous trail of slightly over 100 miles connecting Mankato to Red Wing. Like all trails, this will provide excellent recreational activities for area residents, as well as a real economic boost to the communities along the trail. So I urge you to approve this Milltown State Trail funding request, and would be happy to answer any questions you have on it.
Okay, any questions? Representative Hackford.
Mr. Chairman, do we need to move these bills to bring them before us? If we do, I would make a motion to approve.
Representative Hackbarth moves that House File 85 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Capital Investment Committee. recommendation.
Mr. Chair, to the author and other members and that are coming up later today, one question I have on all trails is, what's the current length that's finished or paved on the trail, and then what's the length you're looking for? You said it was a 25-mile total trail length. How much of that is paved now, and how much are you looking to pave?
We have, Representative Duncan, Mr. Chair, we have approximately 3 miles paved between Northfield, the South, and Dundas. And then it's kind of hard to calculate the paved area through the city of Northfield because as the trail comes through the town, it goes on dedicated bike lanes on the sides of city streets. So we have that, and then they've secured right away through the Carlton Arboretum, which you can ride on trails area there. It's not bituminous surface. That would be come after this funding request. So all told, there's probably about a 5 mile chunk of trail that is hard surfaced right now.
But Mr. Chair, and how much will be paved after, if you're successful in getting the money?
We would end up with a paved trail of the Milltown Trail, which would be about 25 miles.
So you'd have 25 miles paved if, okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, we will lay this bill over for inclusion, possible inclusion in the committee's recommendation.
Thank you.
And Representative Cox, I believe this is the first trail bill that we have today, and we actually have several that we're going to be listening to. I think there's quite a group here in the audience with regard to that are interested in trails today, and I'd just like to bring your attention, members, to them. Maybe if we could have those organizations stand as I mention them. The Gateway, people with Gateway Trail, people with Paul Bunyan, up there in the back, Minnesota Valley, up there, over here also, Shooting Star, very good, Rochester Yoda, there, Blazing Star, okay, and Glacial Lakes. A couple over here. Great. And Milltown. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Just want members to know that there's strong support here for the trails that we will be looking at through the morning.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll have House File 274, Representative Dorman. Blazing Star Trail segment. Okay, we'll pass over that. Evidently, he's not here right now. Is Elka? Is he here? House File 52. Gazelka? Representative Gazelka. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Dr. Chair.
I'll move that House File 52 be recommended for inclusion in the committee's bill to capital investment. Representative Kozelka.
As we start here, I have one request. Line 7, the amount of $1,211,400 be changed to $1.5 million. I believe I need a motion for that.
$1.5 million? I'll move that on line 7 we strike the $1,211,400 and insert $1,500,000. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Members adopted. Okay, same thing on line 14. We'll just include that.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, of all the trails that you're going to hear today, the Paul Bunyan Trail is probably the most significant. Just kidding, I'm sure they're all good, but this is the one I'm passionate about.
There you go.
In a nutshell, this is a bridge that will go over the road Excelsior in Baxter, Brainerd Baxter area. Mostly this is a safety issue. Right now the trail crosses Excelsior Road on a curve, and it's a very congested road, and if you like adventure, older people, it's fun to cross that, but if you're a family with little kids, it's dangerous. And so we want to make sure that we get a bridge over that. This was in last year's both Senate and House bonding bills. But as far as, so safety is probably one of the issues, but this also is the very heart of the Paul Bunyan Trail system. The Brainerd-Baxter area built a building next to an arboretum where people can walk, and they've also tied in the bike trail system to that. So now the DOT is behind it, the DNR is behind it. In fact, the DNR is developing trails from Crosby, which is east of town, to come into this, over this bridge into this location. Baxter Trail System links over this bridge into this location. So it really is the heart of this. And another reason that I think this should happen is tourism. The Crow Wing County State Park is being developed where this trail will be 5 miles over this bridge to get to the park in 5 miles. And so you'll have many, many people coming right into the Brainerd-Baxter area and riding their bikes to the state park as well. So it really is a significant project. I don't know of anybody that is opposed to it in our area. And it's, as far as significant to the state, very, very many people come up into this area to use their bikes and to enjoy the bike trail system. So I could talk longer, but I see you have a ton of bills, and I got to get to my own committee.
Any questions?
Briefly, Mr. Chair, so this is a bridge, not a trail. It's a bridge, and I see it's connecting to the Obistar Tunnel. Is Obistar putting any money into this federally?
Mr. Chair, Representative, he put in federal money for a bridge or a tunnel to go under 210, which is adjacent to Excelsior, and so we are contributing the money to go over Excelsior to get to the tunnel. So that I know of, no.
Thank you.
Representative Gazelka, this is a safety issue out there, or is that...
That the primary concern is safety. That would be the number one concern.
And this was from last bill?
Yes.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll lay House Office 52 over.
Thank you.
Members, I should mention that the previous House file we had, House File 85, was a new proposal. It was not in the bill. That's correct. It was not in the committee's recommendation last year. House File 129. John Moe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
We have...
I have
we'll move House File 129 for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a pack of information about this, but the other end of the Paul Bunyan Trail being passed out to you. As Representative Gazelka pointed out, the Paul Bunyan Trail runs from Brainerd up to Bemidji. There is, it's 107.9 paved miles of trail. There's a couple of bridges that are that you all are considering. One that Representative Gazelka presented. Our particular proposal is for the north end of the trail. The Paul Bunyan Trail stops dead at the south end of Bemidji. The city of Bemidji has purchased land to up to the point that we're asking. We're asking for a total of about $6.1 million. $3.1 million is specifically for the land acquisition that would continue this trail up to Lake Bemidji State Park. One additional mile of trail would be considered. This would continue the trail all the way from Baxter up to Bemidji. You'll see the exhibits you have. Exhibit A is the DNR map for the entirety of the trail, the Paul Bunyan Trail. The DNR is a strong supporter of continuing this trail up to Bemidji and of acquiring this property. Also, Exhibit B, you'll see how the trail, Paul Bunyan Trail, comes into the south of Bemidji. During the winter, snowmobiles will actually come off of the trail and run right through town because we don't have a continuous trail through Bemidji, and continue on to the east side of Lake Bemidji, which you'll see in red. We have proposed a split trail format, if you'll see on Exhibit C, that will allow the snowmobiles to travel on the south side of that property that's being developed, on land more suitable for their travel, and then right adjacent the lake will be a paved bike pedestrian path. The completion of those paths is part of the overall budget. At this point, the most important part of this is the land acquisition. This land currently is going to be subdivided by the developer. This is a one-time opportunity for the state of Minnesota to complete this trail through Bemidji at a price that will be much inflated after this point. And I think Representative Junkie's question was how many paved miles. There's 107.9. This would make it 108.9.
All right.
Here are the other questions. Okay, thank you very much. We'll lay House File 129 over for a possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee.
House File 15, Representative Rukavina. We can just skip over this. We'll go to the next one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this is...
Mr. Chair, I'd move House File 15.
Representative Junkie moves House File 15. Be possible recommended for inclusion in the capital investment recommendation.
Mr. Chair, members, a number of you have seen this project before. It was in the 2002 bonding bill. It was one of the vetoes of Governor Ventura. It was in last year's bill. The Mesaba Trail, when it's completed, Representative Junkie will have 132 miles of trail. Right now, 90 miles are paved and 60 miles are contiguous. There's about $8.8 million in the project, of which $2 million is local, $2.3 state, and $4.5 federal. And when the trail's done, Mr. Chair, members, like I said, it'll run from the Boundary Waters and Representative Bill's district in Ely to the Mississippi and Grand Rapids in Representative Solberg's district. The request before you is for the trailhead building, which will be located just outside of Eblet. And Mr. Chair, I'd stand for any questions. I believe there's a handout. I don't know if we get. Yeah. And with me is Mr. Manzoline, Bob Manzoline, who's the director of the Sunset Project.
Okay. Are there any questions from members? Very good. I think that takes care of the questions I would have had.
Thank you. We've
seen this before, so it's...
Chair, this has been around, like I said, quite a bit of state funding and federal matches and local matches, and this would be the crown jewel of the project, so I'd appreciate your support.
This was in the 2002 bill. Was it also in last year's recommendations?
Mr. Chair, it was in last year's bill. It left the floor.
Okay.
And left the way it convenes.
Okay. It was not part of our committee recommendation?
I don't believe it came out of this committee, no. But
okay.
It was in the House bill as it left.
Ah, that's right. This one, we had some timing problems, I believe, last year, didn't we, on introduction? Or? There was some technical problems or something, I recall. It was not that we, the committee didn't really... leave it on the table, so to speak. It was really didn't, somehow we didn't get this right before, so I forget all the particulars about it. There's some difficulty, I believe.
Mr. Chair, I think you're right, and I know you're a strong supporter of this project, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Conan? And Representative Peterson, I believe you're both going to come up with bills. I think we'll first talk about House File 22. Representative Peterson will move House File 22 for possible inclusion in the committee's recommendation. Representative Conan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. It's good to be back here again, even if it's only for a little while today. But we're asking to have both of these bills presented at the same time, as they're all part of the same section of the trail from Big Stone Lake down to Granite Falls. We're going to have presenting for us, say, Mr. Jeff Hathaway. He's the expert on the trail section there, and we'll let him take and say a few words concerning this bonding request.
You're welcome. The committee, please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Hathaway. I'm a citizen from Montevideo, Minnesota. And I have with me also Jim Massey, who is a citizen of Appleton, Minnesota, has been working on the Minnesota River Trail as well. And Marta Kersey, who is executive director of Clean Up Our River Environment for the Minnesota River as well. Mm-hmm. I will be brief. I recognize you're on a tight schedule and have a lot of bills to consider. It's a little hard for an attorney to sit in this chair and follow somebody who identified his trail project as being the most important for the state of Minnesota, but I'll leave that without rebuttal. The Minnesota River Trail Project has actually about a 75-year history. It goes back to the 1930s when it was first proposed by the Department of Conservation. It was resurrected in the 1960s. Out in our part of the state was viewed as something of a communist plot. At that time, there was only a small stretch that was actually authorized as state trail very close to the Twin Cities from Jordan into the confluence with the Mississippi. In the last 10 years, we have done more to advance the project than in that prior 60-year history. There is, Representative Junkie, 4.8 miles paved from the city of Montevideo to a very small town of Wegdal, which is between Montevideo and Granite Falls. And this bill would handle the acquisition and engineering and construction of the remaining 8.2 miles to Granite Falls. There is also a portion of this that would be used for planning of the overall corridor, which would be from the origins of the Minnesota River up in the Big Stone County area through to the confluence with the Mississippi, which is already underway. I come to you as a representative of a coalition of about 50 to 60 local units of government and nonprofit organizations and governmental organizations and citizen groups that have collectively decided that this is a part of the state that has lacked state investment in recreational infrastructure, and it is very critical to us diversifying our economy in rural Minnesota. And we've worked very hard to get the 4.8 miles paved, worked very hard on corridor issues, have funded about $250,000 in studies and preliminary engineering and environmental studies. And the city of eminent, Granite Falls is undertaking an eminent domain proceeding with respect to some railroad corridors as we speak, so that this corridor will be freed up, the 8.2-mile corridor will be freed up for the construction that would be funded by this bill.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. We'll go back and ask the others that have testified before us already, but I think we also need to have start to address as to what these, is this going to be phased in, or is it possible to phase this in? I'm starting to tabulate up here as to what we're getting presented to us, and the numbers are going to be quite high. So if we start to, we work on these putting individual projects in, some of them, you know, would be, our choices right now may be zero or full amount. If there's a kind of a compromise area or some suggestions on how to deal with that, that would also be very good for us to hear. And I'll go back and ask the others also and make sure that the committee members are aware of that history. But you have some advice for us as to how we're dealing with that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that note, Representative Peterson for the tape, Aaron Peterson. If you look at Representative Conan's bill, number 22, and you look at the bill I'm presenting, number 54, the portion that Mr. Hathaway just described from Wegdal to Granite Falls is a part of House File 54. In the spirit of compromise and getting a bill out and through the process quickly, I would move to withdraw or diminish or zero out number 54 in the hopes of gaining more support for number 22, and then go with the amount recommended by the Minnesota Parks and Trails Council, specifically for Granite Falls to Wegdal, which would make your calculations in the total number much more easy to attain a target.
Okay. See, why, Representative Peterson, as long as you're there, why don't you give us an idea of what 54 really entails, how far, what distance that was? You said that's actually included in 22?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we did 22, we're covering 54?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. You're doing a portion of 54, of House File 54, and Mr. Massey could describe that more clearly. It's 11 different segments in the Upper Minnesota River Valley, stretching from Granite Falls to Ortonville, and with a desire to, for instance, connect the city of Ortonville to the Big Stone National Wildlife Refuge, 6 mile, 7 mile auto loop tour, which is good for bicycling on as well. That's one example. Connecting the city of Appleton to the Minnesota River itself, Lacaparra Lake Reservoir, is another example. A lot of these examples are such that connecting the towns to the valley, if you will, in their segments, which would then go into the cumulative total of the designated state trail in the Upper Minnesota River Valley.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And either Representative Conan or Representative Peterson, how far is it from Wegdal to Granite Falls? What is that segment? I can't find it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Representative, that segment is 8.2 miles. The segments that Representative Peterson is describing in House File 54 are various other segments that would become part of the Minnesota River Trail. But that 8.2-mile segment, in terms of phasing, is the logical next phase. It's got topographical surveys, aerial surveys, all digitized. There's been preliminary engineering done and preliminary environmental work done. That 8.2 miles is the stretch that's ready to go.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, as I understand it, Representative Peterson, you're withdrawing 54, and we will be laying House File 22 over for possible consideration.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
House File 37, Representative Johnson.
And I think 144, Mr. Chair, will do both.
Okay. Representative Johnson moves House File 37. You consider for possible consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joining me at the table is the Mayor of Painesville and Representative Hoche. And the reason is his House File 144 is also included in House File 37. So House File 37 has both pieces in it, but they're both important. Briefly, you have a handout in your packet on the Glacial Lakes State Trail that I provided. You can see the trail, which is an old railroad bed, and you can see a breakdown of the costs on the second page. And the third page actually came from Greg Sapir, our trails, DNR trails person out there, with the information you probably need on it also. Just to highlight, in 1996, we broke ground on the first 12-mile segment of paved trail from Wilmer to New London. And we think now in 2005 it's time for phase two, if you will, which would be another 10 miles of paving from New London up to Painesville. And again, members, one of the reasons I was asking for mileage was I think it's important. Once you reach that 20-plus miles or so, you become more of a day-ride destination for these trails, and that's one of the problems we're having on this right now, is it's just simply too short. Ultimately, this trail will run, the rail bed runs up to Richmond, and if you're familiar with that area, from Richmond to St. Cloud, then they just have put in a new four-lane highway, and they have left room next to that to actually get to St. Cloud. So as we phase this in, ultimately, you'll see a trail from Wilmer all the way up to St. Cloud is our hope. Again, one other thing to point out, besides the trail work, Mr. Chair, and you can see that highlighted on the third page from Greg Sapir, there is a safety issue here also. This trail, it goes along a busy Highway 55 and crosses it, and it also crosses an extremely busy railroad. There's a railroad crossing, and this money would also put a bridge up over that rail crossing and take care of that safety issue that we have up there. Eventually, someone's going to get picked off on that just near Painesville. I'll quit there. I'll let Representative Hoche and the mayor describe their parcel, which actually is a trail connection from this into Lake Coronas area in Painesville.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I'm Representative Hosh. Before you is House File 144. This is a connection to the Glacial Lake Trail from Lake Coronas through the city of Painesville. I'm just going to give a little bit of legislative history, then I would just like to refer to Mayor Thompson on the specifics of the project. But this project has been included in both the 2002 and 2004 bonding bills. In 2002, it was victim to Governor Ventura's pen and was vetoed. And you know what happened last year in 2004. So this is a project that has been supported in both the House and the Senate in the past two bienniums. So I would hope that we can get the support this year. Other than that, I would like to refer any questions or any details to Mayor Thompson.
Welcome to me. Please identify yourself.
For the record, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jeff Thompson, Mayor of the City of Painesville.
Do you have any additional information you'd like to present?
I would just like to stress that this is truly a community and regional support. We are phasing the trail to encircle the Lake Coronas and then also tie into the Glacial Lakes Trail. We are doing this in phases. As a community, we've already completed two sections. We have about 5 miles of paved trail now. We are currently working on a design for a leg which will connect the city of Painesville to the lake. And that, incidentally, is being done with no cost for right-of-way or easement. We have worked with 10 landowners to provide at no cost to the project the rights to put the trail there. So just to demonstrate that this is truly a community effort. The phase that we are asking for assistance from the state for now is to connect the City of Painesville portion of the trail to the Glacial Lakes Trail.
Okay. Questions,
Mr. Chair, just to finish up in the spirit of cooperation, and I hate to even mention this because I look later on the agenda and I see about 14 trails for Heidgerken, but this one starts in my district, goes through Representative Heidgerken's district, and ends in Representative Hosha's district. So it actually entails three different legislative districts.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. House File 37 is laid over for possible inclusion. And did you want us to lay over 144 also, or is that... Okay, Representative Junkie moves House File 144 for possible inclusion. That will also be laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. We'll go to House File 274, Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for not being here earlier, and I appreciate your willingness to.
I'll move House File 274, possible inclusion in the committee's recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 274 is for an extension of the Blazing Star Bike Trail. Blazing Star Bike Trail, one of its heads is in the city of Albert Lea. The other one is in the city of Austin. And eventually, we'd like to connect the two cities with this bike trail, and we'll also then connect, hopefully, to the Shooting Star Trail, which will come to Austin from the south. The appropriation that we're looking for this year will help us do two things. In phase one, which we had hoped to begin last year, but you know we're a little bit behind, will take us from Helmer Myrie State Park or Myrie Big Island State Park, which is about 5 miles outside of Albert Lea on Albert Lea Lake. The state is the biggest landowner on Albert Lea Lake. Help us get across the lake and into the village of Hayward. The next construction will begin as we head from Hayward towards Austin. I think the total cost of the project or the remaining part of the project is about $6 million, but obviously we are not asking for that much, nor are we ready to do that because there are some land acquisition things that need to happen before we do. And so the majority of this would be to help us get across the lake and get to Hayward. And it's a very well-used trail. It'll eventually connect. Right now it connects the city of Albert Lea to Myrie Big Island State Park. Seen significant increase. I was visiting with one of the park rangers on Sunday. He sees a significant increase in usage of the park because of the trail. A lot of people are using it. It's going to be a regionally important park, and I think that's why, even though I represent Albert Lea and Freeborn County, the city of Austin is pushing very hard for this because they look at it as Austin and Albert Lea both sit on I-90 of a regional significance to help boost the economy of the communities, the smaller communities in that area, and plus better utilize the state park. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Okay. And you may have mentioned this, but I missed it. What is the current length of the Blazing Star Trail?
The current length of the Blazing Star Trail is, I believe, is 4 miles. Okay. Let me scan my notes here.
And this would be for 16 new?
Right.
Okay. Are there other questions from committee members? Okay. Thank you very much. House File 274 is laid over for possible consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
House File 278, Representative Nornis. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. We have a handout that we'd like to distribute, I think, which is the yellow packet.
Right. While they're doing that, I'll move House File 278, be recommended for possible inclusion. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I have with me today several other Fergus Falls residents. I have the mayor, Russ Anderson, is next to me here. Superintendent Mark Bezik is at the table with me. And City Administrator Mark Siebert is up in the audience, and they will answer questions if you have some as we proceed. I have to point out at the beginning, we're not asking for any money for a trail. That seems to be the theme today, so we're going to change the topic for just a moment. House File 278 is requesting $2.5 million to make an expansion at the Prairie Wetlands Learning Center, which is located in the city of Fergus Falls. And the reason for the request, I'll let the superintendent go into more detail on it, but it's become a part of our educational system in Fergus Falls, very innovative program that started about a year ago, and
So it's a partnership between the City of Fergus Falls, which owns the building, Fish and Wildlife Service that operates the facility, and the school district that's now using it as a classroom location for some of the students in fifth grade. Again, learning with a heavy environmental component, I think that's the uniqueness of this, and the students have really found it to be a real positive experience. Governor Plenty visited our community last summer and had a chance to see this classroom in operation firsthand, and he was very impressed by it. At that time, he was able to meet our superintendent, Superintendent Bezik, and I think the governor has a special interest in this kind of innovation when it comes to education. I, at this time, would like to ask Superintendent Bezik to further explain the program. I also urge you to look at the packet. There's a nice, well, there's several things in there, but an evaluation report is one of the things that I'd urge you to take a look at when you have an opportunity. Superintendent Bezik.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for allowing us to speak here today. As Mr. Nornis said, if you take a look at the evaluation packet, that kind of sums up the whole program right there. The Prairie Science Class evaluation report gives a pretty good overview of the program from its inception, which started 2 years ago. It was a program designed by a teacher not to bring the environment into the classroom, but bring the kids out to the environment, which is fairly unique. Presently, it's a fifth grade magnet program. It operates as a site-based program independent of our school buildings. It meets every day throughout the year. These kids are in the field every day doing their work regardless of the weather. It focuses on environmental education with an emphasis in science, math, and writing. In the evaluation report, you can see that we've had significant achievement gains in those areas. Superior to what we've had in the regular classroom. It's an extremely unique and innovative program. It truly is one of a kind in the country. U.S. Fish and Wildlife has brought several people out from Washington to see how they can duplicate this program in their other environmental centers. As Representative Nornis said, this is a collaborative effort between the City of Fergus Falls, who owns the facility, State of Minnesota, who built the facility with bonding money, Fish and Wildlife, who operates the facility, and now the school district, who we are using it in conjunction with those other entities. Presently, though, we're limited. We have, when we started this program 2 years ago, we brought 50 kids out to try it. And the overwhelming response, we have 95% of the kids coming into the program, into the fifth grade, their parents want them in this program. We had, our enrollment's gone up in our district because kids are coming in from other schools and from the private schools and from other districts to get in to this program, but we can't fit them in. We have 2 600 square foot classrooms in this facility. We are looking for to expand to 4 1500 square foot lab classrooms that all have access to the wetlands out there. So that's our dilemma right now. We have a hot program. Governor Plenty was up. He supports the program. It fits right into his plan of innovative education. We have excellent teachers out there. Again, it's a site-based program, so it operates independently. It's a way of offering innovative educational services to kids in an effective, cost-efficient manner in greater Minnesota. And again, we're looking for $2.5 million to expand this facility, to open up not just to our kids, but to older students and adults. We also have a dorm facility there. We have a connection with the University of Minnesota Duluth. We would like to use this also to train environmental educators in the future. Actually, we have that connection right now. We are getting student teachers that come out to train in this type of education.
I need you to identify yourself for the record.
Dr. Mark Bezik, Superintendent of Schools, Fergus Falls.
And with this type of a facility, like I know we have a environmental school at the Minnesota Zoo, I think that was constructed by the local school district. I'm wondering if this is really if this committee is really the appropriate forum for us to be considering this type of issue. As I'm understanding your proposal, it's for structure, an actual school structure.
Correct.
Okay, Representative Norton, what experience did you have? I'm sure you pursued those alternatives.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Mayor Russ Anderson
maybe just give the history of the development of the facility, how it came, how it was built and who paid for it, and why we think that it's appropriate that that system, again, be used to expand the facility. So,
okay.
Mayor?
Yeah. Please identify yourself for the record. Welcome to committee.
Yeah, I'm Russ Anderson, Mayor of City of Fergus Falls. And the Prairie Wetlands Center is located between Highway 59 and the bypass of 210, and also Highway 25 and Interstate 94. It's in that quadrant. And it was originally, it was farmland, and some of it is native prairie and these types of things, which blend well into the instruction that goes on there. The initial thing was begun in 1994 and 1995, and the pre-design was done in August in 96, and the grant for that amounted to $450,000. The construction of the entire project began in April of 1997, and the grand opening of that facility took place in 1998, and it is a city-owned function, and we have like Dr. Bezik said, how the relationship is between the school and the city, and also the DNR, and we believe that this is a very, very unique opportunity to advance this type of teaching in our community. And I guess other than that, I would ask if there's any comments or questions.
Mr. Chairman, the one thing that I guess I wanted to emphasize is that the building was built originally with a $3 million grant from the legislature to the DNR, and that then was granted to the city. So the same process was used, I believe, in 1994 when the original bonds were approved by the state. So we consider this to be expansion of that facility and not a School District 544 property. So we consider this to be the appropriate place to ask for additional funds so that this additional building can be located on that location.
Representative Norris, do you have record as to who or which committee actually worked on that project in 1994?
I do not have an answer. We can get
that
answer.
We'll try to find out. It's. Do you know if this has been an LCMR project in the past?
I don't believe it has, no.
Okay, so I know there's quite a few environmental learning centers that they have supported in the past.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of this committee. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I congratulate you on this program and hope that because it doesn't fit into any of our categories, it doesn't fail because it's not a good fit. And I can see that. But my question has to do with your approaching fifth graders right now, perfect time to get kids involved in science, absolutely perfect time. But you said you were going to do something with older students, and I didn't understand what you were doing there.
Correct. We'd like to expand this opportunity to older students in the high school, and also the college connection that we have at UMD and also locally at the community college. Right now, this was a pilot program started a couple of years ago by a very excited instructor that we gave the opportunity to try this to. And I look at this, and it's doing great things in this fifth grade program, but I look at it as a model for change on how we deliver educational services. There's no reason why we can't duplicate this for other grade levels, and not just in the environmental area arena, but into many other areas. Our goal, though, because we have this beautiful complex out there, is to fully utilize it. It's, in my estimation, when I came to Fergus 4 years ago, I saw a very underutilized facility. And this was one way. Now we have 100 kids a day out there, out in the field, out on the trails, what have you, doing work. My goal is to involve more kids and get environmental education really connected into the schools.
Mr. Chair, if I could add one more thing. This facility is also a statewide significance, I believe, because students from all over the state of Minnesota will have access to that. There's dormitories, facilities there. Students come, spend some time from other districts throughout the year. And so it's not just for the Fergus Falls School District. This really represents an opportunity for students across the state
And so for that reason, again, we again feel this is appropriate to at least request the $2.5
million. Okay. Other questions? Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know who the right person is up there to ask this, but who owns the property or the building or both now?
The city of Fergus Falls.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think in our testimony explained that Fish and Wildlife operates the facility.
Yeah.
Okay. House file 278 is laid open for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson, House file 81. Representative Peterson moves House File 81 for possible inclusion in the committee recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And before I start to describe and hand over to the experts I have with me today on the project, you can, in the appropriation, again, to hit a target and get a bill out of this committee, you can drop that from $1.775 million and change that and put in $935,000, which would match the amount moving through the Senate at this point. So with me, I have Dick Rainier from Canby, Minnesota, whose idea this is. He's been here several times, has been included, been not included in a couple bonding bills, and John Meyer, a consultant on the project. So I'll hand it over to Mr. Rainier.
Just before we do that, let's go ahead and take care of your amendments so we don't forget
okay.
that.
Yeah, thank you.
On line 7 and on line 15, we'll be striking $1,775,000 and inserting $935,000.
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Okay, we'll go with Mr. Meyer first. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please
good
identify
morning.
Yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is John Meyer. John Meyer. I am the co-parent to this project, and I appreciate the opportunity to visit with the chairperson and the committee members. I also have Dick Rainier, who is another one of the parents for the project, and Evelyn Rainier, who has been so gracious to sit and put the nice packet together that's been presented here today to talk about the Prairie Farm Center. Prairie Farm Center is located at Stonehill Regional Park, which is a mile and a half southwest of Canby, Minnesota. It's a destination on King of the Trails. So it ties together nice with the King of the Trails. The Prairie Farm Center is an attempt to bring agricultural history, education, and preservation to the classroom. And the center is an actual classroom shared by the school and a technical college to share the information and the preservation of agriculture. Dick and Evelyn have worked on this, but besides myself, for about 6 years. We've been here numbers of times. We have been fortunate that Congressman Colin Peterson has provided us some funding to begin the project, and the $935,000 that we're asking through the bonding bill would help us complete that project.
Well, the big project here that we've been working on is basically... excuse me.
Thank you.
When I worked in the... As you probably, a lot of you know, I'm in the auction business. We try to grab the bull by the horn and kind of go on with it without all this formality. I understand formality, too.
We have a tape.
Not selling anything.
Just so you recognize.
But anyway,
the need
we're
for
here
it.
To, as you people probably know, that the farming, excuse me again. No, I'm Dick Rainier from Canby Porter region. And my wife, Evelyn, we've been working on, like John said, for the last 5-6 years here. We've jumped through a lot of hoops through this whole deal. But back home, where we come from, we were backed up 100% wherever we went on this project. And as you probably know, where we're setting this project up, it's kind of the heads of the water control in that park. As you people all know, that that park is famous for holding the water back off of the Mississippi and the Minnesota and Mississippi River, and it's done a fine job with all the dams that they built there. So they started here a park here about 20 years ago and put campsites on there, and it kept it going, but the campsites have always been sold out 100%, but they're kind of running into a little trouble here. We've got to put some more campsites, but they need a shelter for these people that are coming into this and that. I think you people will know you'll be faced with that. How about shelters for all these campsites? That's getting to be a serious problem, as you probably know, in the state. But anyway, when we put this building up for a museum for farm machinery that is changing so much in our community, that we sat down about 6-7 years ago, and there was a lot of people that told us, come on, put this antique stuff in the museum. And a few years down the road, you will never get a hold of any one of these pieces to put in. And we certainly found that true. But we got many, many pieces to go into that museum. We could fill it up in one day if we wanted to. But we are looking for quality stuff for the last 100 years. We're going to back up and we're going to try to bring this museum to the 1960s. In a 20-year period from day one of the turn of the century, and try to get that, and when we get up to 1960 in this building, the rest will take care of itself as it comes in as agricultural changing. I don't have to tell you that the family farm in our district is gone, period. Oh sure, there's a few of them left here and there, but the big industries have come over and took over, and we gotta put this stuff in a museum for our children to look at. And for you people in the metropolitan area, which you got a lot of relatives that come down there every summer for vacation, and they would like to see what their forefathers done. Well, we're gonna put this stuff away, and we're not coming on here next year and say, hey, we need more funding. You give us the money here now and we'll take care of that, because we don't have the population and the resource to keep this thing running the way it should be run. We've done our homework on financing this thing, but we just need the money here to get this thing built and on the road. And I'm positively sure that it's going to work. And I wouldn't stand in front of a body like this and say that we hope it works. We know it's going to work. But we need this money now. We cannot wait no longer. We should have had it 5 years ago. When it passed the House and Senate here, and it went up twice to Jesse's table. You know Jesse. I don't have to go any farther on that one. But that's what happened, and we're back here again trying to get this thing resolved here today. And if you got some more here to add, thank you for letting me talk to you people.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to wrap up, this is, and Representative Magus knows this well, is that we've got an issue in southwest Minnesota that we've got the constant conversation of money leaving Minnesota and going to South Dakota. Well, this is the other direction. We've got South Dakota money coming into Minnesota, and you can't get a campsite without a reservation at this park, which was simply a bald hill 20 years ago. And you know, it's highly used and growing, and it needs, for safety reasons, a shelter, and there's also an opportunity to tie into the ag heritage and expanded opportunities for education at the Minnesota West Community College and the city of Canby and the high school and the middle school and lots of surrounding communities. So it's got broad support, and we've been here a couple of times. We would ask for the reduced amount that was amended in the bill. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from committee members? Okay. Thank you very much. House File 81 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much. Okay.
We have a couple of people here from out of town that I want to make sure that we get on this morning, if possible. House file 113, Representative Poppy.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 113.
Ducky moves consideration of House File 113. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I'm Representative Jean Poppy from District 27B in southern Minnesota. With me today, I have Gerald Meyer, who's a representative from Prairie Vision, and also we have Charlie Anderson in the audience. Prairie Visions is a joint powers agreement between Austin, Rose Creek, Adams, Tailpe, and Leroy, which are cities along the trail. And I have some brochures to distribute to you. As you open the brochure, you'll be able to see a map of what the district is and where the trail is. Today we're here to testify on behalf of House File 113, which is Shooting Star Recreational Trail, which is essentially along the Minnesota-Iowa border. This particular project has previously been favorably heard in the House and Senate, was included in the 2002 veto, and we are hoping that it's going to receive, again, favorable results here. One unique feature of this trail request is the opportunity to capture federal funds. There are IT funds of $416,000, which have been allocated to this project, but without favorable action this year, will be lost. Currently, there is 10 miles of the trail completed from Leroy to Tailpe. Overall, the length across the trail will be approximately 32 miles from Leroy to Austin. The east end of the trail will connect with the Root River Trail in Fillmore County, and the west, as Representative Dorman discussed, will connect with Blazing Star Trail in Austin. It will also connect the Forestville State Park, Lake Louise State Park, and Big Island State Park in southern Minnesota. And in addition, directly south of Tailpe, we will be able to connect with the Iowa Riceville Trail, and the Iowa Trail is coming up and is already pretty much in place, but it's about 3 miles from the Minnesota-Iowa border right now. So if you have any questions for me, I do have Mr. Meyer here who would be able to answer any specific questions regarding the project.
Okay. Griffin,
just a question and a comment. Tell me current total paved miles and how many more you're adding with this project.
There's 10 miles that are completed as blacktop.
And it's 32 miles, Mr. Chair, when you're done?
Approximately,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And secondly, just to the committee and the chair, and we maybe should have asked this of others too, they've been alluding to it, but this one, I believe they talked about matching federal money that may be lost, and I think we should need to take that into consideration on projects moving through here too.
And I need you to identify yourself for the record.
I'm Gerald Meyer from Adams, Minnesota. I'm representative of Prairie Visions, and I'm chairman of the Shooting Star Trail.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay. House File 113 is laid over for possible consideration inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next, we'll take House File 273, Representative Welton. If there are others that are from out of town that and being heard this morning is critical, if you make sure you let my staff know so we can get you on this morning. Hopefully we'll get through the whole agenda, but we don't know. Let's see. Representative Junkie, you want to
move? I'll move House File 273, Mr. Chair.
Representative Junkie moves House File 273 for possible consideration.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd ask Representative Welty if there's a dollar amount he'd like moved on this bill, too.
Yes, I'll discuss that. Thank you, Representative Junkie. And thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Just want to let you know that I brought donuts. I saw your list of bills today and figured that you might need some extra energy to get you through all of the bills this morning.
All right.
First of all, my name is Andy Welty. I'm Representative Welty from District 30B, and here with me today is Jeff St. Main. He's a community member from EOTA, and he's been working on the segment of trail that we are here today to ask for bonding for. And I'll turn it over to Jeff St. Main for his testimony, and then Representative Junkie, I will address your question.
My name is Jeff St. Main. I'm from EOTA, Minnesota, and I'm chairman of the Chester Woods Trails Committee. Brief history of our trail project. We were authorized by the legislature in 1992 as part of the state trail system. We were considered a northern extension of the Bufflands Trails. The EOTA Economic Development Authority has been our sponsor through the last 11 years. We started in 1994. In 1999, we were awarded $50,000 for planning from the bonding bill. We are a group of volunteers that have used our own time and money to promote and pursue this trail project. Initially, we had worked on a trail system that would connect the city of Rochester with Chester Woods County Park, a park that has 1,300 acres onto EOTA and Dover. Since we started that trail effort, we've also been working with the Great River Ridge Trail System, which goes from Plainview, Elgin, Viola, and down to Highway 14, State Highway 14. In 2004, we collaborated with the Great River Ridge Trails Group and the St. Charles Trails Group and came up with a three-county plan that would connect Rochester, Chester Woods, EOTA, Dover, St. Charles, onto Whitewater State Park, Carley State Park, Plainview, Elgin, Viola, and connect again in on that County Road, State Highway 14, just west of EOTA. We feel that because Plainview, Elgin has already, actually Great River Ridge Trails Group has a completed trail from Elgin to Plainview, and they have everything graded and ready to go all the way down to County Road 9. They have the easement for from County Road 9 over to Highway 14. They are finishing up a $600,000 bridge refurbishing project this winter, and they will be ready to go to complete down to 14 in the next year. They are will be waiting for us at that point. It's crucial for their trail and to connect in with us in order to take their trail into Rochester to connect it to a major population center. We feel that this trail is, it's going to be a safe, family-oriented recreational activities, and it'll promote healthy living lifestyles within our communities, but it'll also bring a huge economic development impact to the trail, or to the cities I've mentioned, and to state parks, and to Chester Woods County Park. Within the county park, as I mentioned, there are camping, or Chester Woods, that's 1,300 acres. There's opportunities for camping. There's trails within the park, fishing and swimming. It's something that we've tried to bring. I'm from EOTA, and we've been trying to bring our citizens into that park from our community for over 10 years now. Thank you.
To address your question, and first of all, I want to point out, Representative Junkie, and to the members of the committee, in the bill you'll see on line 1-6, it states that we're seeking appropriations from the general fund, but we want to make a technical correction to that, and that's bond proceeds. This is a bonding bill. And we did talk to Ms. Marilyn Brick to inform her of this before we came to the committee. Otherwise, it would have brought forth an author's amendment. As far as the amounts, we are seeking a total bonding package of $1,064,000 to cover the entire cost from acquiring the land to laying the asphalt. but this amount is reflected in the 2005 Parks and Trails Council at $1.1 million. The very minimum we need to move this process forward is $200,000 for land acquisition and planning. We believe that this bonding from the state of Minnesota will leverage private and local public dollars, as well as additional grant funding that a number of communities in our area have been working for and have received. The $50,000 that Mr. St. Main talked about before, that was included in a bonding bill that Representative Davids was behind. Representative Davids is very supportive of this. This trail would possibly link up in the future with the Lanesboro Trail, and for all of you who know about the trail down in southeast Minnesota, it's a very popular destination. We believe that it's going to bring people to our area from throughout the Midwest and from out the United States. If any of you have been to Lanesboro, there are license plates from all over our country, and there are thousands of visitors and tourists that come there every year. The small community of Iota that Jeff lives in, I was just informed last week that the cooperative is now turning from full-time or yearly employment to seasonal employment. And the local gas station is just closed there. The downtown area needs to be revitalized, and I believe that this will help do that. If we can bring one or two businesses, it will dramatically increase the economic stimulus to this area. Besides that, it will add to the recreation opportunities and improve the quality of life for those of us in southeastern Minnesota and our communities. I just want to point out on page 3 of your packet, there's over $65,000 that has been promised to us by the community of Iota to move this process forward, especially when the trail does come into the community of Iota. Also, there's $15,000 there for planning this year. Besides that, we have leveraged the staff assistance from the National Park Service, the regional headquarters in Minneapolis. They are behind us. They believe in this project. The Great River Ridge Trail, which goes from Plainview to Elgin and then on to Iota at this point that Mr. St. Main was talking about, they have been very, very active. And I've been reading about this project for many years. They have themselves raised $1.8 million in federal, state grants, and also private dollars and other public dollars. We have not come to the legislature before from the Great River Ridge Trail for bonding. We will be next year. We're only asking for $200,000 this year, and we believe, by looking at what Great River Ridge Trail has done, that we will be able to leverage a lot of additional dollars that we will need to complete this trail that won't require state money. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And committee members, I'll take questions.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd move $200,000 be inserted on line 6 and general fund be crossed out and bond proceeds be added.
Okay. Bond proceeds fund, I believe. Did everyone hear the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Any questions from members? Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll
wave
the bill over. House file 273 over for possible inclusion in the committee's recommendation.
Have a good morning.
We'll go to House file 230. Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson moves House File 230 be considered for inclusion. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. House File 230 will fund acquisition of key bluffland parcels along the Metropolitan Mississippi River. And with me is Tom Diamond, a citizen who's been very active on this project, and he's a former member of the Mississippi National and River Recreation Area Commission. He's going to comment briefly on this initiative.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much for the time and opportunity. I'm a resident, for the record, it's Tom Diamond, resident of St. Paul, As Representative Johnson mentioned, I had the honor to serve as one of the commissioners on the mineral. The critical area was established in 1973 by the state legislature, and it's really been a strong bipartisan effort. It's a 72-mile stretch that runs from Ramsey and Dayton on the north all the way through the metro area down to Hastings and Ravenna on the south. And just to get the map up here, Henry Park section is right here along by Big Day Lake. This also just gave you an orientation of the scientific and natural area here. To give you a sense of this 72-mile stretch, it's the legislature established it, and it's been, as I say, a bipartisan effort. Both Governor Anderson and Governor Quay were leaders in this. Congressman Bento and Senator Durenberger also led on the federal level. And we have the state DNR and the National Park Service as administrators of this property. And it's the implementing agencies are the cities, townships, counties, along with the state and the federal. And it's really important for a number of reasons. As a matter of fact, it's quite a bit. But just briefly, it was designated as a state critical area because of the natural resources that are valuable and also the sensitive lands, the bluff lands and the shorelands in this area, and dealing with the water quality and the scenic values and the habitat here. This is a major flyway, both for songbirds, for fox eagles, and for waterfowl. It is an amazing resource. Just down along there the other day, and it's amazing how many of the waterfowl are already coming up and into this area already this spring. There's been a tremendous amount of support, and Henry Park is part of the fragile bluff land that is threatened, and it is very important that we protect this land, part of the overall plan, but also because of timeliness. There's a willing seller on this, and we could lose this land. And we were talking about trails and length of trails, and there's that adjunct. I can't give you the length of the trail, but this really is the mother of all trails that this property helps us hook up, amongst other things. There's a trail that will eventually run from Lake Itasca to the Gulf of Mexico along the river, and parts of this have been implemented. And this particular property, amongst other reasons, would allow us the opportunity to connect this portion of the trail. There's a section of the trail here that's been built by the state of Minnesota that would help us connect that to the river, which is one of the assets of this property. I should mention that there's been, as you have in the handouts, there's a map there that just shows you it. But also, if you take a look in the handout, there's a list of the groups that have worked in support of this Henry Park section. And what they have done is they have spoken up loudly about the values of protecting these lands. And I should also mention that both the Pioneer Press and the Star Tribune have both written editorials in support of the acquisition of this property. I also think that it's, I didn't include in the packet, I didn't want to get too much, but one of the other groups that's on that list that who's been very supportive of this effort is the Mississippi River Parkway Commission. As you know, that commission is made up of legislators and State Department personnel, Minnesota State. And they have been just very strong advocates of this, including Senator Sendrums, who's one of the authors on the Senate side. I've been speaking about the value for tourism and for the scenic values along this corridor and how important it is to protect this particular parcel and the corridor as a whole. And so I think it's really important that we have such a tremendous bipartisan effort. We've been working on this for over 30 years now along this corridor, and this is a very, very key parcel. That is very important that we get included in the bonding bill at this time.
We have questions from members. On the map that you handed out, where is the Henry Park is located?
Henry Park is in this section right here. My finger is. And the trail section, as I say, well, as a matter of fact, it's the solid section here. It will allow it to be hooked
it doesn't quite show all the elements, but it will allow it to be booked over here to bring it along the riverside. But there's many other attributes. That's just one of the many attributes of this property. It's an environmentally sensitive bluff land, and it's a very important part of this integral plan.
Okay. Any questions for members? Okay, House File 230 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
House File 360, Representative Paymar. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
I will, Representative Dill will move House File 360. Do you recommend for possible inclusion?
I have a handout if there's a page of it. Members, House File 360 is seeking an appropriation of $388,000 from the bonding bill to complete the Meeker Island Lock and Dam Historic Site. The Meeker Island Lock and Dam was the first lock and dam ever built on the Mississippi River, and it literally is on the border of St. Paul and Minneapolis. And it was closed, and the construction started in 1899, and it was closed in 1912 after only 5 years. It's an extraordinary area of the Mississippi River, and it's listed on the National Register of Historic Places as a site of national significance. Unfortunately, this lock and dam site is very difficult to get to. There's a rocky bluff on the Mississippi River Boulevard, and to get down there really is very difficult. But once you're down there, it's an extraordinary place that has tremendous opportunities for people who love the wilderness, the wildlife that is along the river. And there's a road, there's an old wagon road that they used to use back 100 years ago to get down to the lock and dam, and right now it is in the condition of it is unacceptable. You could not get down it. So what we're looking to do is to, with this appropriation, is to restore the old wagon road and create a safe pedestrian access to the river edge. The city of St. Paul would like to at some point build picnic areas down there, interpretive center down there, to so people can enjoy the Mississippi River. And with me, if I could just ask him, if Mr. Chair, if Jack Maloney could take a few minutes. He's a resident expert on the on the area, to take a few minutes to describe the project in more detail.
My wife would probably argue with that definition. My name is Jack Maloney. I'm a member of the Denoyer Park Improvement Association. I've lived in Denoyer Park on the edge of St. Paul for 17 years, and for the first 10 or 12 years, I didn't know that we had a historic site in our neighborhood. No one else in the neighborhood knew that either. It was only in the last 5 or 6 years that we've learned that we are on the edge of one of the most significant historic sites in the state of Minnesota. The Meeker Island Lock and Dam was, as Representative Paymar said, was built back in 1907. It was a mistake. It was the first lock and dam built on the Mississippi River. They later found that they should have raised the next dam farther down at Ford Parkway, which they did, and it flooded out the Meeker Island Lock and Dam. It was blown up. The dam was blown up in 1912. On this handout, you can see a picture of the lock and dam as it appeared in 1912 on the cover. And the next page, you see what it looks like today. There is no lock and dam. There's no dam there. The lock is still there. It's 334 feet long. It's a huge structure. It has attracted a lot of curiosity, but only recently have we found out what it really is. The National Park Service sent one of their archaeologists from the Midwest Archaeology Center there last fall to surveyed the site. His conclusion was that is on the second page. Clearly, the Meeker Island Lock and Dam site has very high physical integrity, is a unique national resource with significance in American history and archaeology. Unfortunately, you can't get there from here. We have a magnificent site. It's on the river. It's a place where we have waterfowl, we have beaver, we have eagles. It is a peaceful, quiet, calm place right in the heart of the metropolitan area. But the citizens do not have access to it right now. What we're asking for is funding so that we can stabilize and restore the original wagon road that was built 100 years ago so that it can be a pedestrian path so people can get down to enjoy and appreciate the river heritage. This project is supported by the Minnesota Environmental Coalition. It is supported by the Friends of the Mississippi River. We have received funding from the City of St. Paul for park planning down there. The City of St. Paul and the National Park Service matched funds, $25,000, to build fencing to stop erosion on the site. The LCMR funded buckthorn removal, about $30,000, which was spent on this site. So there has been commitments from the federal level, there's been commitments from the city level, to and some LCMR money from the state to help restore this site to the use of the public. 10 years ago, 5 years ago, it was a no-go area. People were actually afraid to go down to the river. Today, it's an area that people really want to get down to, but right now we don't have access, and what we're asking for is help in getting access for the public.
And Mr. Chair, if I might add that there's negotiations underway with the City of Minneapolis to connect this site with the current trail system in Minneapolis, so this would be an extraordinary opportunity, not just for the Twin Cities, but the entire metropolitan area and people from the states who love the Mississippi River. And with that, we'll stand for questions.
Any questions from members? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
House File 360 be laid over for possible consideration. We'll next take House File 83. Representative Simon. Representative Dill will move House File 83 for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I'm Representative Simon. And House File 83 is a connection of two regional trails of regional significance in the metro area. They're very popular trails, so it's an impact that's beyond just St. Louis Park. I'm just going to talk real briefly about the procedure and leave the substance to our guest today, the Director of Public Works for St. Louis Park, Mike Reardon. In terms of the procedure, as the committee's heard many times already today, this is something that's been through this committee before. This was supported on a bipartisan basis last time, and actually in 2002 it went all the way, but was the victim of Governor Ventura's veto pen. So this is really the third time that we're seeking the support, and we're hoping that the third one's the charm. So I'll turn it over now to Mike Reardon to discuss the details. Oh, sure. Representative Latz.
Mr. Chairman and members, Representative Ron Latz, the other half of St. Louis Park, and Representative Simon. This is a regional trail connection. The project is ready to go. In fact, it's been ready to go for some time. Representative Rhodes had authored this provision, this bill, in 2002 when it was passed, and he and I co-authored the bill in 2004, which stalled with the rest of the bonding bill. We'd ask for your support once again so we can get this long overdue project passed. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Mike Reardon, Public Works Director for the City of St. Louis Park. As been mentioned, we have been here before. What I would like to do is call your attention to several items within the booklet. I believe that's been handed around
As far as the problems are, what this is trying to accomplish is a connection over County State Highway 25 on the east side of Trunk County 100. There's approximately 25,000 vehicles a day on that highway. That's pretty high traffic. There is an at-grade crossing further to the east. Unfortunately, that's not very well situated and doesn't get that much use because it's viewed as dangerous. There were there was a death back in the 90s and several near misses there. During a citywide process several years ago, this was identified as a major connection within the city, that this north-south corridor between the two regional trails and also this over this roadway. There is a citywide sidewalk and trail plan that was adopted through that process, and this is a key component of that, and the City Council is highly supportive of this crossing. The City of St. Louis Park, assuming this gets funded and built, will own and operate and maintain this crossing. Again, I just like to stress the regional significance of this, not only because of the trails on either side of that and this being a key connection, but there's also mass transit on either side of this, of the Highway 25 corridor, which is difficult to access because of the difficulty crossing this this coming highway. With that, I'd answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman, if I might add 2 points. Three Rivers Park District has also given us a letter in specific support of this as a important to the regional network, both in the Minneapolis Trail Network and in the Three Rivers area, which covers several counties. I would also note that the City of St. Louis Park is providing equal matching funds if this gets funded. So our community is putting its money where its mouth is in supporting this trail. We ask for the state support as well.
Okay. Questions from committee members? Okay. House File 83 is laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Powers, we have about 3 minutes left. Do you want to do it this afternoon, or would you prefer to do it now? That'd be fine. We'll bring you right up. House File 339. The move for possible inclusion. I'll move that for inclusion in the committee recommendation. Representative Hollis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 339 would put $1.5 million in capital investment money to the DNR for reforestation. With the DNR's budget the way it is in the last few years, it's very difficult for them to take that out of their general fund. This would give them the boost that we need in reforestation, and it's supported by a lot of members of the House and the Senate. That's all I have to say, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that's cool.
Well, I don't mean to prolong this lengthy testimony, but have we done, Representative Powers, have we done reforestation with bonding in the past? Maybe one of the DNR folks.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, I don't recall that we have, but I would think someone in the room, I see someone in the room that would probably answer that.
See rescue coming there.
Mr. House tells me I have 30 seconds. members, member of the committee, my name is Bob Tomlinson with the DNR Division of Forestry. Your committee, the legislature passed reforestation bonding in 2002. It was then vetoed by Governor Ventura. And last year you did leave the session with $3 million on both sides of the Senate and the House for reforestation out of the capital investment. That's the history of the bonding relative. So we haven't quite got it over the finish line.
I believe that was a new attempt at trying to find revenues for this effort, and maybe you could take just another minute and explain why this issue is before.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this issue is before us because basically we've been attempting to try and put capital investments back in. We currently assure reforestation occurs on all harvested sites in the state. But the problem is that oftentimes that's not the most ideal type of reforestation. It's natural regeneration coming back to aspen and other species, and we prefer to invest more in longer-lived conifer species, which are a longer-term investment, more expensive investment, which we can't afford out of our general fund appropriation. The North Shore Subsection Forest Resources Plan, which is nearing completion, is calling for about 1,000 acres of conifer reforestation just in that one subsection, each year over the next several years in order to meet the desired future conditions up there. That, in essence, it's we're trying to match the bonding money, the capital investment, and look at it as a long-term investment in the state's forest resources, and use that specifically for buying tree seedlings, for doing the site prep work, and for planting the trees, and then use the general fund monies that we have for doing the long-term maintenance that continues to accrue as we get more plantations and need that effort.
Will the general fund dollars be used for the debt service, or we have money? It goes into the general fund anyway, but will there be adequate money to cover the maintenance and the debt service on this?
I can't answer your question, Mr. Chair, relative to the debt service, but certainly for the maintenance, our intent, it would be a very high priority to maintain the investment that we've made in tree planting with general fund dollars.
Any other questions, members? Okay, House File 339 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, we will be adjourning, we will be recessing until 4:30 in this room. And so if we can come back at that time, and we will then try to clear things up as with the remaining testimony as quickly as possible, and get you on your way. So, you put all your materials in your folders so that you will keep that for consideration. Appreciate that. We are in recess.
You bring them to you.
Call the meeting to order. We will resume. We'll start off with House File 444, Representative Heiger.
Bud Light. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. First time we've ever been here. So this is new at this committee. At this time, I'd like to move House File 444.
I'll
move it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Magnus will move that for you. And we're going to, the motion is that we're going to listen to the bill and have for possible consideration of the committee's recommendation. We'll be just laying the bill over. We won't be taking votes on it today.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, I think all of you, Mr. Chair, have the handouts. The first one that I have here, and I'll be very brief. You have the handouts, and I did not ask for any testifiers because they're quite simple, all three of them. The first one is the trail from Starbuck to Glacial Lakes, and right now there is a trail that goes 4 miles south of Starbuck, and there's a mile that has not been completed, and since that time the trail has been beat up through road construction and whatnot all. But right now there is a trail going around, if you turn to the second page of that handout, around Lake Minnewaska. It's one of the largest lakes in the state of Minnesota, and there is also on the north side, it doesn't show on there, there's a trail, Lake Minnewaska, that goes all the way up, not only to the east of Glenwood, but it goes up to Villard. So it's quite an extensive trail. Right now they're in the process of completing the trail completely around Lake Minnewaska. The darkened picture there, the line shows you where the trail would go. It'd go to Glacial Lake Park. I mean, to the park itself, and it would tie up the community there as well as the other trails with Glacial. And there's been some work previously, as you can see, done on that, and the request over there was for $350,000. The checklist of completion, they've done a lot of work previous to there, and they've got a lot of support. As mentioned on page 6 there. But anyways, it's a very, very, very nice, well-used trail. The population out there in Polk County doubles in the summer. There are a lot of people living in Lake Minnewaska. It's a very well-used lake. There's a lot of resorts out there. And Starbuck is kind of considered to be a resort town, as is Glenwood. But anyways, friends of the park asked me to pursue this because they thought it would really tie nicely into with their park as well. Any questions?
This is upgrading an existing trail?
Right.
And it's taking it from what type of condition to...
Right now it's paved, but there's been a lot of roads that have gone through in the time, and there's a lot of gravel spots where they've done road construction where across the trail. But it needs some major work, and there's 1 mile there. It goes through a swamp that's just north of Glacier Lake State Park that will take some work, and that's why it's a little bit higher than what a lot of trails probably would be.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, just a general question maybe to you and your history. When we put in trails all over the state and pave them, who do we usually assume will be doing the upgrading and maintenance? And obviously all of them eventually will need repaving. Is that something we're on the hook for forever, or have we typically handed that over to a county, city, or other unit? Just a little history on that, if you could help.
Well, Mr. Chair? Also give us that history.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Junkie, the difference would be whether it's a state trail or a local trail that we've given the local unit of government bonding for to build it. On a state trail, the state would typically assume the responsibilities for the maintenance, the upkeep, and any of the rebuilding that needs to be done. On the local trails, it is normally the maintenance upkeep is the responsibility of the local unit of government. Whether or not any rebuilding would be theirs or for the legislature is just another decision for this committee to decide if they want to bond for it again.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, to that point, if you turn to the third page, required attachments, resolution accepting responsibility of the sponsoring agency and commitment of financial resources, agreement to maintain the facility. There's an agreement in there signed by the county engineer, as well as I believe there's another one with that you do not have signed by the commissioner. So,
okay. Any other questions? Okay, we'll lay House File 444 over for possible consideration for inclusion in the committee recommendation. Representative Heidegger.
Thank you.
House File 328.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. This one here is this is the what is often referred to, and I took this as the headlines of the Stock Center Herald, the Forgotten 4 Miles, and the Minneapolis Tribune and the St. Paul Pioneer Press have been a write up on that as well. It seems that the entire trail has been funded. They forgot about 4 miles. From Sauk Center to the county line, and it's a $220,000 match. The county has agreed to bond for half of it. So what I'm looking for here is for $220,000. It would be the largest tarred bike trail in the upper Midwest, if not in the entire United States, once this is completed. It will go all the way from St. Joseph all the way up to Fergus Falls. And into this trail, there are also wings that are being tied into it. There's construction, I think, next year, going from Holdingsport on down into the trail. And a couple years hence, there is a funding, I think, in place to tie in Little Falls. But there is also plans right now, I spoke with Chuck Wilkin, of tying the quarries of St. Cloud into the St. Joseph as well. So it's a very, very well-used trail. It's one of the most popular ones in the state of Minnesota. But we're missing 4.4 miles, and it's the monies are there from the counties, and it's just a $220,000 need that they have. And much of the previous money I was involved in it on the Lake Wobegon Trail, we used JC money. The JC's kind of spearheaded the trail in its when we first started with its inception.
Other questions from members? Okay. Seeing no questions, I'll move that House File 328 be laid over for possible consideration. Committee recommendation. And let's see. Oh, what do we have here? Representative Heidegger. House File 327.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thought if I was going to ever ask for anything, I may as well do it all at one time. These are a couple small projects, and I've been working real close with the Friends of the Park, and the first one I'll refer to, if you want to pull out, is Munson State Park. It was a forgotten park that has been there for many years. It goes back to the 1920s, and it's not very well used. And the reason for that is it's a very, very difficult park to stay. I mean, you have to really go back to the living in the 1950s to do it, because there are no electrical units out there. We have plumbing and we have electricity out there. And the friends of the park have done a lot of work of cleaning that park up. Representative Aaron Peterson and I spent a day out in the park out there when it was pretty much overgrown with weeds and whatnot all. And the friends spent a lot of time of getting this up to where people are staying there again. And it's kind of an overflow of Sibley. There's a lot of people that will go over there and they'll see there's no electrical units and they'll pick up and they'll go home. But I think if you look at 03, there's 13,800 people that stayed out there, and Larry Peterson's here, and he could, if you have any real detailed questions, he most certainly could address them. But what they're asking for is to get a few electrical units out there so that people will use it. There's a couple lakes in there. We added, I think, 3 acres to the park last year, and we're looking at there's a possibility of adding some more acreage at a later date. But it's something that they requested. They're only requesting $50,000, but it's something that I think is a very worthwhile request. It's something that we've forgotten, a part that we've forgotten for some time.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Drunkie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to back up what Representative Heiger, and I think it's actually in Peterson's district, but it used to be a stone's throw from my district before redistricting also, and I just want to accentuate what he said. A lot of the work out there has been done by private citizens, not by state park personnel or others over the years, and it is a dedicated group. It is a beautiful little park with a lake and other things there, and as you know, Sibley's one of the higher-used parks, which is located about 20 miles from this one, and many times they need the overflow, and there is not, you can't even plug in your shaver in the morning, Representative Dill, and I think we need to provide some of these upgrades to these folks and help them along. I would also mention a windstorm came through there, what, about a year ago, too, which just wreaked havoc, and they've been out cleaning it up again and trying to keep the park going, and they share personnel with Sibley, and I just want to emphasize to the committee that this isn't pie in the sky. This is a really a needed project as far as state parks.
Chairman, those comments, are they, you mentioned mostly about the electrical campsites. It's also asking for some camper cabins and an upgrade of playground.
Okay, that is in the other part that's in my district, Chair. Chairman, we have also Glacial Park over Starbuck, and they, at the same time, the friends of the park were looking at a camping cabin. They have some matching monies there. The local Brank Foundation has approved $20,000 for construction of camper cabins at Glacial Lakes. So we're looking at, they have one there that is constantly being, that nobody can use because it's already booked for the entire year. But they're looking at doing a couple of them out there, and they have volunteers that are willing to do it, and the package on them is about $15,000 apiece. And they have vendors that are willing to do a lot of the groundwork and everything else. And they have $20,000 upfront money already. And it's something that they had requested. And if you turn to the back side, their attendance was last year at 52,957. So it is a well-used park. And it's a very, and they have a lake within that park, a 57-acre lake that is just a beautiful lake. It's very clean, and it's just, it's immaculate, in it, and people talk quite highly of that little park.
Any other questions? Okay, I'll move House File 327, be laid over for possible consideration in the committee recommendation.
And I thank you all.
Oh, we're done?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Is Representative Saylor?
I'd move House File 203, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Johnson moves House File 203 for consideration. Welcome to the committee.
Yes, Representative Osmond, Chairman Osmond, and Representative Agreda Saylor. And I'm just coming before you today very briefly. We only have one project. Coming before you to ask for your support for the proposed Big Bog State Recreation Area. Some of you may be familiar with this as it's been included in both the Senate and the House versions in the last two sessions. And this is just the second part of their project that they're asking for funding. They've already had the first part of that. And I would just like to introduce Jerry Stensick, who is the Vice Chair of the Big Bog Citizens Advisory Committee. He came down from Waskish this morning to testify for you. And this advisory committee includes 25 area cooperators who have come together to promote and enhance the Upper Red Lake area, the economic, commercial, and the social interests of the area. I'll be brief and turn this over to Mr. Sensig. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and representatives, Jerry Sensing. I live about 6 miles south of Waskish. It's by Upper Red Lake. Closest neighbors about 3 miles as a crow flies across the swamp. I'll try to keep this brief. Big Bog was originally created by an act of the state legislature back in the year 2000. Our original park development bonding request was a little over $4 million. When we were created, we were bonded half with the understanding that we'd be back for the rest. Well, in 2002, we did come back, and it did pass in both the House and the Senate. It was included in both bonding packages. We were vetoed by Governor Ventura at that time. We came back again in the year 2003, and again we were included in both the House and the Senate bonding packages, but no bonding bill was completed in that last session. Now we're back again to respectfully request inclusion of House File 203 in the amount of $1.2 million for park development funds to complete the project. Big Bog is a success story. Our local contributions over the last 5 years total nearly $185,000, which is no small feat when you consider that the 2000 census for Waskish was 116 people. In 1998, when what is now Big Bog was the state forestry campgrounds, it was recorded overnight guests of 366. Well, last year we had nearly 4,000 overnight guests, and we had park visitation of 47,200 visitors. The reopening of Red Lake Walleye Sport Fishing is anticipated to occur the spring of 2006, which is, what, 15 months away? It's not unrealistic to expect Big Bog visitation at that time to exceed 100,000 annually. We need to be ready for this avalanche of tourists. Park development bonding now will enable us to do that. The visitor center plan that's been passed around is 4 years old now. We do have the septic is in, the wells are in, the archaeological surveys are completed, the engineering and design is done. We're ready. We're also ready to scale back on that design because we do understand that there are some fiscal concerns as far as operations. But we're ready to go, and that's all I've got to say for now.
Okay. Are there any questions? In your testimony, you stated 1.2, and it has in the bill right now 1.6. Do you clarify, Representative Saylor, as to which is the appropriate number?
Okay, 1.2. That's what's in the Senate bill, and I think that Mr. Stensig would like to speak to that. Okay.
Mr. Chair, representatives, the reason we scale back to 1.2 is, again, because we have a lot of that infrastructure is already completed. Some of the costs in the back of that brochure that I passed, that Representative Saylor passed around, the septic is completed. That was a major cost. The engineering and design work, that's completed. That was another big cost. We don't
at this time need the 1.6. All we need is the 1.2.
Mr. Chair, I'd move to change strike 1.6 on line 7 and 14 and insert 1.2.
Okay, and any questions on Representative Junkie's motion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Those amended. Any other questions of the author? Okay, House File 203 is laid over for possible consideration in the committee recommendations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda, we have the Department of Natural Resources talking to us about changes from the 2004 proposal in the governor's capital budget. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name again is Mark Holston, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, I'm just, as I understand it, you wanted to go through the changes from the 04 recommendation to the 05 recommendation and then highlight some of the other activities?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Chair, there were a number of particular items of note in changes from the 04 recommendation to the 05 recommendation. First one would be
Mr. Chair, members have the document that he's working on. It was handed out the other day, and
I didn't see it.
We'll go up and make copies and get that right back home.
Okay, Mr. Chair, my understanding you didn't want to go through the entire. You've already been through the entire government recommendation.
Correct. We are just looking at your changes. Yeah.
There is one change to the dam repair, reconstruction, removal. There was an additional $150,000 added on top of the governor's 04 rec of $1 million to $1.14. That added two facilities, which were Jacksonville and Albert Lee, those two facilities. So that the dam at Jacksonville and the dam at Albert Lee Lake. One is a removal slash modification, the other is the replacement of an existing.
Senator Holston, can you refer me to which document you're referencing so I can try to track? I don't know which one you've got in front of you. You don't have one in front of you.
What I thought I came here to do today and what I'm doing here are two different things. So, I'm going just through the...
Well, what did you come here to do?
I was under the impression, Mr. Chair, that we were covering... the differences between the 04 committee report and the 04 or 05 governor's rec, and going through the major items.
Okay.
The $150,000 difference in the dam safety repair. I can go through the dam safety repair if you want me to. I guess, you know, Mr. Chair, how much detail do you want me to go through?
We just kind of want to get an idea as to kind of where the changes are that the governor made. And working off the committee report is a good place. So if you're working off where the committee report was at last year that we sent over to Capital Investment and where the governor's 05 recommendations are different than that committee report, that would be, the most benefit to us because we're all working off the committee report.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the governor's recommendation for I'm not going to go through all the items. I mean, we came in with a $20 million request on flood hazard mitigation. Your committee report came out at $23.6 million. I don't see a need to go.
And you're back at 20, correct?
We're still at 20, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I don't think the governor had anything within the bill or your bill as far as riders go, just for the program entirely, correct?
Mr. Chair, many of our programs where we do not identify particular items or particular projects is largely in case of projects move. Items move around throughout the year, especially in areas like flood hazard mitigation, but even in dam safety. Depending upon what's going on out there in different conditions at different times, whether federal funding, local match, priorities change throughout the year. And the ability to move those dollars around to projects that are ready to go, ready to hit the ground and run. Sometimes federal money doesn't come, or those projects come in at different levels. So the ability for us, we have laid out traditionally those prioritized levels or prioritized projects are generally the ones that the legislature follows.
Okay. Representative Pass.
And Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner, on the sheet, this blue sheet.
Yes.
Is this your are these your priorities then on the back? You know, projects in the mix right now, or
yes, okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Kennis.
Okay.
The map shows flood hazard sites, and we are running a list of our top 24 priorities right now.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, we haven't asked for enough money to cover the top 24. We cover 13 priorities with the $20 million.
Okay.
And those in, you want me to go? I can walk through that blue sheet covers. Covers those?
I think we can just take.
Okay.
Anyone have any specific questions on flood mitigation lists that we have here? Okay. What's your next item?
Mr. Chair, as I said,
yeah.
In the there's 100.
We'll work off of these sheets. Is that what you have in front of you?
That's what I'll be going through.
Great. Just let us know which one you're on.
All right. I'm just going to stop at the next one, which is the dam repair and safety. There was a $150,000 difference from the 04 to the 05, and as I said, that brought in the next two projects, which was Jacksonville and Elderly Lake.
Okay.
You see that at the bottom of your page. Mr. Chair, the next... and just identifying differences of any significance would be page 10, which would be the water access acquisition betterment and fishing piers. Should be page 10 of your at the bottom, page 10.
Okay. What are your differences there?
The difference there is the governor's recommendation was for $3.5 million. I believe the committee report was at $3 million. We can't stress enough the activities that are going on in this arena. As from acquisition to rehabilitation of these facilities, costs associated for providing the public access to lakes are only going up. We have seen an erosion of dollars over the years. As different priorities come in over the years, we've seen differences. This is a increase from previous bonding recommendations from past years, and it's that in order to try to revitalize or reestablish that necessity to provide the public with access. We have two things going on: rising lakeshore costs for acquisition, but at the same time we have rising impacts to our existing facilities for rehabilitation. There is a structural, there is a fundamental change in boat ownership that's going on out there, and that change is moving us into bigger, more powerful boats that cannot be loaded or unloaded in the same fashion that they were years ago. That's putting additional wear and stress on our existing facilities. So I just want to bring the committee's attention to that $500,000 difference has a significant impact for us. Mr. Chair, the next one would be on page 6.
Why don't I just hold you up right there for just a second, and that so we can kind of walk through it. Unfortunately, we don't seem to have a copy of this capital and budget issue of what other bills are on there. And as we're going through, and so members, after DNR finishes up, by that time I'm hoping we'll have that copy, and then we'll go back over and talk about the individual member bills that were in the committee report last time. So if we have any questions about those, we can talk about those also. So, okay, where are we at? Which page?
Mr. Chair, we're moving to page 16.
Page 16.
Mr. Chair, members, inside your packet you have a packet of there's a governor's task force on forest industry. I believe that's in your packet. That is a list of recommendations. That would be the one, Mr. Chair. This was a task force that was put together it's been 2 years now, a year and a half, looking at forest industries, the necessity, the competition that's going on across states, across the country, internationally, around the world, and where Minnesota fares. It came forward with a list of recommendations of state actions necessary to keep Minnesota's forests viable in an economic fashion. Mr. Chair, the governor has made several recommendations. The first is on page 16, which is a $3 million request for reforestation. It is broken up into two categories, $1 million for preparing 10,000 acres for reforestation, and then $2 million for planting and seeding of an additional 10,000 acres of forest lands. I can't stress enough that as forestry has changed and as management practices have changed, the necessity to make an investment in our forests required this activity to occur if we're going to stay viable.
Deputy Commissioner Wilson, I know that on the committee report, members will see that we had zeroed this one out last session. I'd like to give people just a little bit of background and a bit of the reality of what we had to do last time. We're underneath a budget allotment of commitments that we could make towards capital investment, and we decided that there were priorities that we were going to fund rather than this particular one. I have to tell you what I believe we also shared at that time with other committee members. It was not because we didn't think that this was a valuable program. It's one I was convinced that the administration and the Senate, as well as others in the House, thought enough of this program that it would appear again. And so we used the money to fulfill our budget responsibilities or get our proposals underneath the cap. It was just we had to set priorities, and that's how we did it. And so it's just so. I want you to know that so that you are taking fresh views on this stuff and don't necessarily take exactly what happened last time as what needs to occur in the future. But that's how we did it in order to try and stay within our spending limitations. Are there any questions on that one?
Yes.
Representative Pence?
Mr. Chair, didn't we discuss, too, that... this is a requirement already, a reforestation. So when, help me out here. Don't people that cut it replace, aren't they required to reforest to plant seeds? You know, maybe we've got more land we can handle. I don't know. Just a thought.
I think this came underneath the heading of that bill that we heard this morning with regard to these are dollars that we're reinvesting into higher quality plots, I think. So could you tie that together for us,
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, members, Representative Fennis, yes, there is. This is special. Right now, the reforestation effort that's going on is just allowing the regeneration of basically aspen to occur, or natural regeneration. There are targeted species that we want to go back onto the landscape or reintroduce back into the landscape that they were designed for. For these particular types of species, it requires more management, more activity, and physical planting to get these type of species regenerated, both for the health of the forest, but also for the economic benefits to the timber industries.
That helpful, Representative Fennis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's helpful. And I guess when the statute requires reforestation of all harvested state forest lands, and I realize we need to make the best investment to get the desired trees and outcomes that we want, but reforestation to me is not letting nature take its course. You know, if that's what the requirement is now, or am I understanding wrong? I don't want to belabor it. I can talk to you another time. I'm sure it's money well invested.
Mr. Chair,
well, I'm not sure, but
Mr. Chair, Representative Pettis, if our only desire was aspen, cutting it and letting it regenerate, there would be no, that is reforestation in that arena. It doesn't require us to go back and do anything. It just naturally regrows. That's why I'm not a logger or forester, but it's referred to as the weed tree, because it just comes back. We have a necessity to do things a little bit differently than we've done in the past. And that's what this is designed to do, help us mature that forest.
If it would naturally regenerate, it's my understanding it would be low quality stock that 20, 25 years from now may not be the value that the state's really looking for. And if we go to plant more desirable products, looking out, potential that this investment
I don't know if I'd go down it that way.
Because we can find more places for this money, so.
Well, no. you know,
there comes your rescuer right there.
Well, no, you know, because yeah, my forester may, you know, everyone takes a different view on forest management and how to achieve it and what are the end results. But I think Mr. Carroll wants to pipe in on this kind of thing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pettis, you are right on the theme as to why we're asking for this money. It is an investment. We have gone to a great deal of planning with public interaction. We have identified what is scientifically correct on these sites. We've identified what is consensus as to what we should be doing in our planning process, and we need these dollars to follow through and actually complete the conifer restoration and the optimization of even hardwoods through this investment. You're right on track. It's the right question. What are the right species for optimum return, not only financially through timber, but the right species for wildlife habitat and for recreational use on those sites? This allows us to go in and do that direct management as opposed to just natural regeneration. Natural regeneration on some sites is clearly the way to go. But on other sites, because of past practice, either through farming or burning or those types of things, we need this investment money to get the conifers back on those sites that were there originally before the sites were disturbed. So that's exactly the right question. And anytime you want to ask us that question, we'd be glad to provide detail, because that's exactly what this money is targeted for.
I take care. Any other questions? Okay, what's your next page?
Mr. Chair, the next one would be page 25. This is the State Trail Acquisition and Development Area. Mr. Chair, this goes back to the conversation that Representative Junkie stepped in into, the one that the legislature has grappled with for session after session after session, and will long deal with it after you guys are gone. The desire of
or somebody will.
The desire of the communities to grow. The desire of communities to have state trails through their communities, connecting their communities. The number of state trails, I forget where we are today and how many we have authorized construction of versus what we have built. But it is numerous in terms of miles. The reality is we haven't put the money into rehabilitation and maintenance of our state trails. Governor's recommendation of $2 million was all predicated or all designed for rehabilitation of existing trails. You know there are 5 specific trails in the governor's recommendation, mm-hmm. and that we feel are in critical need of some rehabilitation work. And you will, as I know, is looking at the list of all the members who came in with new trail development issues, it's again, it is a very difficult issue, wanting to work with communities, wanting to help communities develop these new trails, but recognizing operation and maintenance of these does come at a cost, and we do need to make an investment back in the rehabilitation of these.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if there's no further questions on that. Mr. Chair, the next one was on page 27. This is, again, going back to that same theme that we talked about just a few minutes ago on reforestation. This is a new concept where we are asking the state to make an investment on county-administered lands or county-forested lands. Any county that... this isn't replacing revenues or replacing obligation of counties to do reforestation work. This is an incentive program, or $1 million that we're asking to incentivize counties so that if they will commit dollars towards reforestation, we can match those dollars and increase those reforestation efforts on those county lands. Next would be on page 36. Mr. Chair, this is again continuing into that same theme of forestry. Their governor's recommendation was for $1 million for state forest roads and bridges. The ability for us to be able to access the forest for management purposes doesn't come without a cost. It requires us to do infrastructure work and road maintenance, road development, bridge work to be able to enter those stands, to be able to enter those forests and do that necessary management and timber sales activity. As you can see on this list of what we're talking about, we need to replace and upgrade over 30 water crossings, 16 miles, reconstruct 16 miles of roads. We have some safety issues. bridge work and just some basic graveling that needs to be done.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, would this any of this million be spent up in Representative Pennis's district and Representative Anderson's district where your trucks aren't allowed?
Mr. Chair, I need to just say you can get a permit. It's okay. Roll on.
I had to throw that one in there. That's all I have.
Next.
Mr. Chair, the next item of would be page 40. Mr. Chair, what we're asking here, the governor's recommendation was for $3 million of state park building development, rehabilitation of that infrastructure. Again, we are in the issues of trying to revitalize our existing facilities, invest dollars into existing projects, existing facilities on that maintenance. There is a slight change in here from the 04 appropriation in that our new parks director, Cortland Nelson, is interested in taking advantage of generating some new opportunities within parks or expanding opportunities within the park system. As we go forward over the next several years with capital budget requests, it is our intention to put aside a certain amount of that for new opportunities for revenue, which would be camper cabins and electric facilities, the converting of our campgrounds to electric. We'd be prioritizing the parks based upon return on investment and need, where we would allocate those dollars to. We have, parks can provide, I believe, a prioritized list of areas of impact and where we believe these investments would be the most financially sound to be making these investments in both new camper cabins and providing those opportunities and in electrifying campgrounds, campsites.
Last year we included two major park grounds. We did, our recommendation went over and above the governor's. We went, instead of doing $3 million, we recommended $5,800,000, and we included Big Bog and Grand Portage State Park proposals, both of which I think we are still on the table. So what, do you have any comments on either one of those?
Mr. Chair, it is... our comments to the construction of new facilities is much like it was in State Trails. The ability for operational dollars on new facilities, if we look at both the House and the Senate bill of last year, we'd be building three new visitor centers, while at the same time we have visitor centers that are now closed in the state. We don't have the operational dollars to keep these facilities open. We would be having to make some very, very difficult decisions if these facilities, new facilities, were to come online, what facilities or changes in existing services and existing parks we would have to reallocate to either operate these facilities or wait for operational dollars to come. So these facilities we would have to make some management decisions if we were going to staff these facilities or close other facilities.
The I see that on your recommendations of what you want to use this for rehabilitation, also some construction of new camper cabins, as you mentioned, and also the upgrade of electrical service. We just had a bill here that was addressing a couple of those. Could you have your staff maybe get back to us as to where they may fit into this overall picture? Are they already covered, or Is that, was this a new proposal that kind of falls outside of your planning, current planning activity?
Mr. Chair, we can provide the chair and the committee. You're planning on kicking your budget this out Thursday?
That's correct.
We can get you that information tomorrow morning, where our prioritized lists would be and where... I was listening. I did have a specific park, and we can tell you exactly what would fall within our recommendations.
There's two parks. There's House File 327. It's Munson Lake and Glacial Lake.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I don't know where they fall on that list currently, but we can get that for the committee tomorrow morning.
The same thing would be true with any trail proposals that we have. If they're already on your plans or drawing board or whatever, we'd need. That would be helpful for us too, if you could get that information to us.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the next one is on page 42. Mr. Chair, this is the Lake Superior Safe Harbor Program. This has been a program that the agency has been involved in a number of years, and we have a couple of critical proposals that we are in the middle of right now they'd like to go through. But the recommendation from the governor's office was for $2 million to this activity. If you look at the project locations, there are four that we are referencing, which is McQuaid Road, Knife River, Two Harbors, and Grand Marais. McQuaid Road, I believe construction starts this spring. On the construction of that facility, we have enough money to build the basic infrastructure of that of that boat landing. But what is necessary is some of the other infrastructural items. And you know what? They gave me something to read, and I can't. Things like restrooms in the cleaning facility. We have issues of water and sewer lines, electric lighting, ADA ramps, pedestrian issues. Those issues are in part. Are in part of the current McQuaid Road bonding request. Of the $2 million, McQuaid Road is $1.3 million for those added items to finish that or get that in a more usable state beyond just the raw infrastructure of the landing. Mr. Chair, the other one of note is the Two Harbors facility in Lake County. I'm sorry, Knife River, not Two Harbors, Knife River Marina. This is one where we, through the Lakeshore Lease Exchange Program, we took ownership of the land but not of the infrastructures on the land. We have an ongoing commitment to the Lake County to purchase that infrastructure, which is the marina facility there, $250,000. That would finalize that obligation with Lake County. Chair, the next item, if there's no questions there, would be page 46.
46?
Yes. Mr. Chair, this is a change in recommendation. Where we had made a recommendation of $2.3 million, we altered that recommendation to $800,000. We are currently in the process of doing an analysis of our existing facilities within the Department of Natural Resources. We have over 190 office locations scattered throughout the state. We are trying to do an assessment of existing facilities and try to plan for where we need to be strategically down the road. And instead of making investments in new facilities or expanding existing facilities, we think it would be prudent at this time to hold off on that that endeavor until we complete that study and can make a report to the legislature where those facilities ought to be located and dollars be allocated.
Okay. I think that's what was being explained to us when we were on the tour, that you have many facilities around the state that are only one- and two-person offices, and you're looking at how wise that is with regard to efficiency. Okay?
Mr. Chair, I think that would cover... we did, I believe, the shift from that went to asset preservation. So the change difference from the 2.3 to 800,000, the change was then moved to straight asset preservation within the Department of Natural Resources at those facilities.
Okay.
So that would be an increase there.
Anything else?
No, Mr. Chair, unless there are specific questions from the members.
I'm just going to quickly go down through the list of members of projects that were on the committee's list. And now I think everyone has this sheet. And so you can see in the governor's recommendation column, and then you see the what we did is last year was added some rider language on different projects that came underneath different categories. I had already referred to the reforestation, how we had zeroed those out. There was $3 million and $1 million. We zeroed them out in our recommendations here, but I believe I'm correct in that the Capital Investment Committee put them back in on the House recommendation. Am I not correct in that?
You know, I believe that is correct.
Yeah. So our assumption was kind of on target. So it got us to the point we needed to be, and everybody, even though they rejected most of our recommendations, they did keep the administration's recommendations. Let's see. We have underneath the flood mitigation grants, there was Representative Pennis, and Dempsey had a couple of flood mitigation efforts. I believe that those are still on the table and need to be dealt with. We had a dam removal project at Rush Creek that was identified. It was Representative Peterson. I assume that one's still... will still be on the table. It was not. That one went out. That one dropped out. Okay. The... when you go further down, it says the Rim Wildlife Area Acquisition, $12 million. That was actually the WMA that Representative Paulson had put in at $20 million. The governor had it at $12. I think the governor is, we were at the governor's recommendation. Yes. I think the governor's still at $12.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And we go further down, Representative Hoppe had one for $500,000 it was in. I think that one's still on the table. We'll get him to refer to that or talk to about it. If there's anyone has questions about that later, he's not here right now. Metro Greenways, Governor's Rec. We also had Native Prairie Easements, the Governor's Rec. SNA Acquisition, the Governor's Rec. State Trail Acquisition. This one we actually had a bill that encompassed just about all the trails that we've been talking about, and we whittled that down to $5,700,000 that we put forward. We'll bring back the sheets and take a look and see what we how that really ended up coming out of capital investment. We may want to talk about that and recognize that there may be some changes in the future and reevaluate our approach on that issue. County reforestation we've already talked about. The fish hatchery improvements was at the governor's rec. Rim wildlife management area development, slight reduction there. The state forest land acquisition at the governor's rec. Forest roads and bridges, we had a reduction there. And I believe that the and state land, forest land acquisition was at the governor's rec. Let's see, state park acquisition, at the governor's rec. We also had State Park Building Development. We had two projects that we had included at that time, Big Bog and Grand Portage. Both of those, the department's been making the case that that was adding to their workload, and they want us to take a look at that again. Local initiative grants. This is one that we put some dollars into just this category, left a good portion of up to the department, because they have a list of local initiatives, and they have kind of a scoring mechanism, as I recall, that kind of prioritizes those requests. But we did earmark a couple projects. One was for South St. Paul. Representative Pugh at that time had put in the request. At my encouragement, I recall this is some demolition materials right along the banks of the Mississippi River. It's in the South St. Paul area. And we thought that this would help maybe start them getting that area rejuvenated and put back into better condition. And Representative Kahn had one for a Minneapolis grant, Grand Rounds Byway. She has and was describing to us how there's a pathway that can circle through the lake situation all the way through North Minneapolis, coming back down the east side, going through Nokomis, and coming back over meeting the lakes again. She wanted us to support, seeing if we could get that project off dead center. Evidently, it's kind of stalled for now. I do not know where that project is at. No one's talked to me about it this year. Statewide asset preservations, governor's rec, field office renovations. We took a little cut off of that. And office facilities development, we took a small amount. The governor has taken a much larger amount off of that this go around. Lake Superior Zoo grant and the North Shore Parks reforestation. We also put some dollars in both of those. That's kind of the DNR portion. Are there any questions of DNR on any of those projects that you'd like to have any clarification at this time? No decisions to make today. Just want to thought they're here and maybe they could answer any questions you may have on them. Representative Pennis?
I have a question. Now, last year there was Metropolitan Parks was in the governor's recommendation. The Metropolitan Regional Park. Okay, and maybe they are again this year. I just didn't see it. Or is the last sheet, page 48, which is regional park grants, is that that?
Mr. Holston.
Mr. Chair, page 48 appears to be Twin Cities metro area. This would be $3 million grant to the Metropolitan Regional Park System.
Page 48, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Assistant Commissioner, I didn't look well enough because that's outside the county metro area when I read it.
I didn't read that wrong.
Okay.
No, this is for regional park programs outside of the seven county metropolitan area.
So then, Mr. Chair, what did you say?
Recognizing you.
No.
For the record, they may not recognize your voice on here. So.
Is there also for Metro Park?
Mr. Chair.
In here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pennis. It's my understanding that came through Metropolitan Council.
Okay. Okay.
Their bonding appropriation.
Representative Pennis, if you look further up on this sheet, you'll see Metropolitan Council listed right above Department of Natural Resources, and that was $7 million from the governor's rec last time, and we recommended $7 million.
There's a bell now.
This one, page 48, I believe, is new this year.
Mr. Chair, yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Pennis, I'm sorry. That is a new governor's recommendation.
This is recognizing that the rural regional parks, and it's something we've been working on for the past year and a half, 2 years, to try and get something established there. This is the administration acknowledging some of that effort. We appreciate that. Any other questions or clarifications that we can help members with at this point?
Mr. Chair? Just for the committee's note, that report in your packet on forestry, that is the report from the Minnesota Forest Resources Council that was due to the committee today. So I just want the committee to be aware of what that is. They have a statutory obligation to have that committee today. There it is.
Okay.
So delivered.
I mean, I don't get to send you a nasty letter saying where is it at?
You do want plenty of other ones.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything else, Commissioner? Okay. Members, we will be back here tomorrow morning at 8:15 and continue with another series of bills. We are adjourned.